Digital und Real. Digitale Begegnungen von echten Menschen mit dem echten Gott.
Herzlich willkommen bei Digital und Real, dem Podcast der Region Digital in der Allianz Mission. Hier geht es um digitale Begegnungen von echten Menschen mit dem echten Gott. Heute gibt es eine Crossover-Folge und ich nehme euch mit in ein Interview, das ich in unserem Geschwister-Podcast Weltbeweger mit Nick Parker geführt habe. Er hat am State of the Great Commission Report mitgearbeitet, den die Lausanner-Bewegung vor kurzem veröffentlicht hat. Sein Fokus war die Fragen: Was ist ein digitales Leben? Und was ist Ministerium in einer digitalen Ära? Viel Spaß. Und ja, dieses Intro ist von meinem KI-Klon gesprochen. Herzlich willkommen, liebe Missionsbegeisterten da draußen. Ich begrüße euch zu einer neuen Episode von Weltbeweger, dem Podcast der Allianz Mission. Hier berichten wir über Gottes Wirken weltweit und Mission heute. Heute habe ich einen englischsprachigen Gast dabei und das schon mal als Vorwarnung, der Podcast wird auch auf Englisch sein. Wer dessen nicht mächtig ist, kann aber gerne die gekürzte Form dieses Interviews in der aktuellen Ausgabe unseres Magazins Move nachlesen. Bei mir habe ich Nick Parker und zwar ist er uns zugeschaltet aus Südafrika. Nick Parker, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so, so much for having me. It is an absolute pleasure to be with you today. I love German, by the way. It just sounds so cool.
Ah, okay. Very nice. So I thought that that when people hear German, they just hear something like Sauerkraut, like that.
No, it's in South Africa we speak Afrikaans, so there's a few words that are similar. So it's cool, man. I love it.
Ah, very nice. So we'll get to know you a little bit in this podcast, and we get to know a little bit about the State of the Great Commission report of the Lausanne movement you're also with. Let's start up with that. Nick, you have participated in developing the State of the Great Commission report for the Global Lausanne Movement. So, quick start, why should Christians in Germany read this report?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I was really privileged. I mean, there's over 150 authors in the report. And I think what it does is it truly captures a global sense of where we're at in terms of missions and Christianity. And I contributed to proclamation in a digital age, proclamation evangelism in a digital age. And but I think in terms of why it's important, I think what happens is very rarely do we have reports like this that go so detailed into what is the current landscape, what is the current reality of the Great Commission. I think what happens when we sit in our local churches, we have a perspective or we have an idea of what's happening globally, but often that's not really necessarily rooted in the truth or reality of what's happening. And so what the State of the Great Commission report does is it's a great way of really highlighting and illuminating what's happening really in a global sense and what's happening with the Great Commission. And I think there's things that I think people would find surprising, but other things that I think individuals reading it would find really encouraging. I think sometimes we get a sense that, you know, everything is doom and gloom and we're fighting a losing battle, when in fact there's amazing work that's happening in other parts of the world. And in fact, the Spirit's moving in ways never previously seen before. So, yeah, I would highly recommend reading it, even if it's just to kind of understand what's happening from a global perspective.
Hmm. Thank you. Yes, it has been a real encouragement for me and broadening my view on global missions, as well as seeing that some questions we are struggling with in German church are questions that are being asked on other places and spaces all over the world. So that is really, really encouraging. So if you go into the
online report. You can access it for all our listeners at lausanne.org/report. I also put that in the show notes. Then you will find that the report focuses on 10 key questions regarding current missional gaps. And I was asking myself, how did the team around the report came up with these 10 questions?
Yeah, really good. So what's been happening over the last couple of years is Lausanne's been doing a survey of different ministries and missional leaders and people globally, really looking to identify what these gaps are. So these aren't things that people have come up with just around a table in the middle of a meeting. It's based on gaps identified through regional gatherings and kind of listening events, really identifying what are the big gaps that we're seeing currently in the Great Commission. And the reason you would do a gap analysis, or you would do a situational analysis, if you're looking at this from a kind of business point of view or organizationally, is really to identify what are the growth opportunities. And I think what this has done really well is it's highlighted like where the areas of growth are for the Great Commission and for the gospel globally. And so, yeah, these are 10 areas that have been identified based on, yeah, just listening and identifying them through a genuine desire of kind of the global body of believers.
So listening and finding out what are the big questions. So there are a lot of questions in it. We'll focus on the last two of them because we are today focusing on questions of digitalization and global ministry. The last two questions are, what is a digital life and what is ministry in a digital age? So we'll have a little deep dive in that. But before we do that, for you personally, what key findings stood out to you?
Yeah, really, really good question. I would say one of the biggest things that's come out of the report is that discipleship is one of the greatest needs. It's one of the greatest things that's lacking. It came out number one. But then number two was the idea of youth evangelism, youth missions, reaching the youth. And I know we're going to talk specifically around digital. But for me, those two things actually overlap with digital. Precisely, because what we're finding is if you look at the global median age, we live in a world now where that's about 30, 31 years old. It means that we have a pretty young global population. Again, that's mostly biased by the parts of Africa and parts of Asia. But what we're finding is that those individuals who we're wanting to reach are going to be younger. And by the very nature of their age, they would be what we'd call a digital native, which means using technology and social platforms is a way of life for them. It's not seen as an add-on or something, you know, that they do in their spare time. It is part of their identity. And so if we're saying the most important things are discipleship and reaching the youth, I think fundamentally that means that using technology to reach them, engage them, going to be the primary way to do that, simply because it's a part of their existence now. It's not, you know, it's not some add-on or some nice to have. It's people's identity in those things. So, yeah, I think those are the big ones for me. And I think something that also was quite eye-opening for me was the idea that we're having more and more younger people disaffiliated with any form of organized religion, yet still seeing a desire and a need for prayer, which means that we're not necessarily seeing young people not interested in pursuing a life of faith or exploring an idea of there being a God. It's just they've become disinterested in the organized structure of church. Which is actually a positive thing, because I think it means that there still is a hunger and a desire, and I think there is actually an opportunity still then to engage young people. So yeah, it's not all doom and gloom and bad news. I think there's a lot of it highlights a lot of really great opportunity for us.
So let's dig deeper into these opportunities. So you start with the question of discipleship. That is where the report's really pointing out a huge gap among Christian believers, churchgoers, to being in personal ways of discipleship. So looking at the digital space, the question comes to mind, how can digital ways of discipleship help help fill this growing gap in discipleship?
Yeah, that's really great. I think there's a misconception around the term digital. You know, when we think of digital, people often think of ethereal, like it's, you know, it's some like out of body experience. But really, what digital does do is digital allows for communities and communication to happen in ways that were previously not a possibility. So often you'll talk about people talking around asynchronous communication. So you get synchronous and asynchronous. Synchronous meaning like you and I are talking now one-to-one in real time. Asynchronous meaning I could post a message and someone else could reply at a later date, and then I would then reply and this conversation continues. And so what we're seeing mostly now in terms of evangelism and even discipleship is that now this doesn't necessarily need to happen face-to-face, although we'd love it to happen, but it can also happen over a prolonged period of time. And these conversations are back and forth. In fact, I would say that what we've experienced in terms of what we do around digital evangelism is that people are a lot more open to a conversation in a digital realm than they are face-to-face, because I think it's a lot more, it's less threatening, and people feel like they can open up and speak more. So what we're seeing is greater levels of engagement and transparency and honesty. The other thing I would say around kind of digital and digital discipleship specifically is that what we also find is that previously individuals who had a specific like or a specific interest, if they didn't find someone within their geographical community, they wouldn't be able to have anyone to relate to. Whereas now what we're finding is we're finding these amazing communities online where someone who's sitting like me in the African continent but is maybe interested in gaming, but I'm also a believer, can now connect with an individual who's a believer and into gaming in Europe, but maybe then someone who's also in Asia and in America. And so all of a sudden you have these communities and these friendships that previously weren't possible that are now made possible through these digital technologies. And in the very truest form are genuine friendships. These are people who talk to each other on a daily basis, who have built relationships. And so that's why I also think we're in an extremely exciting time where we have these traditional models of church and community and how we've done it previously in terms of evangelism and discipleship, and those won't change. I'm not saying we need to get rid of those, but what I'm saying is there's this new realm that we can now tap in. And I think one thing just to highlight on that is people will talk about missions and evangelism in the digital space and talk about, you know, it's hard, I don't know what to do, or we just can't find people to, you know, share our faith with. Well, if you had to go on a platform like Reddit right now or X, the Twitter, you could look up very quickly a hashtag or a subreddit or a thread around someone posting about being lonely, being depressed, asking, like, does anybody here know anything about Jesus or God? Like, so we have these environments in these communities where people are actively asking these questions. The problem is we don't really have a lot of believers going in and engaging those individuals around those questions. And so what ends up happening is then the people that influence them are other individuals who might be like-minded and have really interesting views around religion or ethics or morality. And those are the voices that are then having a kind of a say and authority in these people's lives. And so it's an extremely exciting time. And then I think, going back to what you're saying, I think discipleship now is more easily accessible than it was before. But I also feel like I'm making it all sound amazing and it's perfect and there isn't any downsides, which there is, and we can get into as well if you'd like to. But I do think that, you know, I think there is a new paradigm now for us in terms of even believers, in terms of faith sharing and engaging in communities.
Yeah, definitely show definitely share some of the experiences you talked about in our digital church plant. I experienced that one of the paradigm we really have to break with is to say that digital is not real. That is what I'm always talking with here. The relationships between people and the encounters between people and God are real, actually. Yeah. And so we have the opportunity to experiment. For example, for our digital church plant, last week I did an online midday prayer. And during the week, where people all over Germany can just switch in half an hour, drop your job aside, pray together. And because some of the people don't have the time to be there at that time, I also recorded this prayer time and put into a podcast. And one woman got back to me. I didn't have contact to her before. And she had a real strong encounter with God just by asynchronously taking part in this prayer time through our podcast. So these are ways where we get really new opportunities of living digital discipleship and connecting communities.
Amazing.
So looking into digital communities, what do we have to learn to do different? For example, as churches. Churches are really
Christian.
Some churches are really great in building community. What do we have to learn regarding digital community?
I mean, this is something I think about all the time, actually. So my background actually is for years within Christian Vision, which is the ministry I work for, I was a community manager. So I'd spend a lot of time thinking around this. And I think there's a couple of things to note here. And I think one of them is our approach to community. And I think maybe this is even in the physical, in terms of even our day-to-day, but our approach to community online is very much control-based. So we want to, let's use Facebook as an example. Many people will be able to relate to this. The church has a Facebook page. Now, they know that they need to post on there. But generally, the type of information that's posted is more of a broadcast. It's more of like, hey, we're telling you what you need to do, or you need to come to this event that we're hosting. And even if there's an element of a live stream, again, it's a Sunday service that's streamed out, very much a traditional broadcast model. What we often see on the flip side of that, though, is that the very nature of social media, the very reason it exists, like its origin story is built around the idea of community. It's built around the idea of that I can connect with people that I either haven't seen for a long time or that I like or I'm interested in. And so what we often do is we have these strategies for social media, but it's almost a legacy approach where we would have taken with TV or mass broadcast with radio, where we have a content piece, we have something, and we're just going to broadcast it out. But doing that across social media goes against the very rule of why social media exists, and that is that it's social. And so what we need to start seeing more is that churches start engaging with people in these online spaces. A very practical example, and this sounds so silly, but it very rarely happens, is that if someone makes a comment on your live stream, like you should have someone on your team who's just commenting back and encouraging that person. Or even understanding that when people engage with your social platform, they don't necessarily want to see some curated version of reality. They want to see the reality of what's happening in your church. And so a great way to do that is to show people the work you're doing in the community, or inviting people to engage in some form of online conversation, or asking an open-ended question, or creating environments where what you can have is peer-to-peer communication. So you create a Facebook page for your church, and maybe you ask an open-ended question, or you put out some thought-provoking idea, and the idea is that you ask the community then to engage each other. And instead of it just being like this broadcast model, we're actually starting to use social media for what its purpose is, and that is, to be able to engage and connect. One more thing, and I, again, I'm I could talk about this all day, so I don't want to take up too much time. But another thing is, when we flip the script and we talk about not just online community, but even online evangelism, people have this very traditional sense of evangelism, like, you know, someone standing and preaching, or someone crusade type event. When in actual fact, what we've experienced as an evangelism ministry who does this every single day is that often the content that engages and reaches people the most is the content that's the lowest quality in terms of production quality, but it's the most relatable. And so we've had a campaign that we've run for years. We haven't changed it much. It's called Middle of the Night. It's literally just a video that runs from 12 at night till 3 in the morning. And it's just a lady talking to screen and just saying, hey, I don't know what you're doing awake right now. I don't know what's happening in your life, or, you know, why you're surfing the net. But I just want you to know that, like, you're loved. Like, Jesus loves you, and he wants to have a relationship with you. And that no matter what's happening, like, he's there for you. You know, and if you would like to find out a little bit more, or explore this further, like, we have a team of people who would love to connect with you. Like, send us a message. Now, right then and there, that's not high production value. That's not scripting. It's just someone sharing honestly and asking a question. And so it breaks this mindset of, like, we need this high production thing, you know. And you could just take a video like that someone could film on their phone, on Facebook, boost that so that it's seen within your geographical location. And you would have more engagement and interaction with people in your community probably than you've ever had before. And it could be as simple as saying, hey, we don't know what you're going through. We're the local church around the corner. Is there anything we could pray for?
Yeah.
You know, and immediately you've tapped into the very essence and nature of social platforms. And that is the fact that it's social.
So not too much high production value, and being able to drop a little bit of control. That is, I find this very interesting. We also in Achievement had currently the interesting point that when having our core meeting, we recognized, hey, there's already someone in our Zoom space talking together, and we recognized that a Bible talk group had built up without us as a core team noticing. And I think that is losing control, but creating spaces where people can get in touch with each other.
Yeah.
And what you also noticed regarding sharing the gospel on social media is which one of our digital missionaries told me about. She said that most important thing is to get in personal contact, like on TikTok live. She goes TikTok live and just starts talking with people. How are you doing today?
Yeah.
So amazing. Relating to people, talking to them, praying for them. And we just currently had just fascinating video of her talking to an ex-Muslim atheist guy, tattooed all over, sitting on his couch, whose friend outside of the video started crying during her praying. And what was fascinating for me was that our digital missionary said, well, I can talk to people and invite them to Christ. I don't have the time to get in contact with all of them, but my followers have. So that is what happened. The followers continued praying for this guy. And a couple of months later, he had an encounter with Jesus. He became Christian and got in contact with another Christian TikToker on the other side of Germany, drove over there and had his live baptism in a river in Germany, broadcasted over TikTok. So I guess there are really learnings in it. Like you said, be personal, really get in contact with people, listen, like the Lausanne report has been the greatest challenge, and have the community on your back that can really go after people having encounters with Jesus. What I'm always thinking about is, you mentioned there are just not enough Christians going out there in the digital realms and being capable or having the tools or the mindset to share Jesus in a way that is understandable, or to be willing to really engage in digital communities in a gospel spreading way. What can or should be done to empower more of those we would be calling digital missionaries?
Yeah, really good question. It's such an interesting question as well, because it's the greatest area of interest to me, because we live in a world now where we have more access to information than we've ever had before. We have more resources and tools at our disposal than ever before. Yet, whenever you look at the data, all you see is biblical literacy rates just going through the floor. Less and less people are understanding even basic biblical doctrine or theology, like, you know, the idea of Old Testament, New Testament, talking about the Synoptic Gospels or anything. You know, this doesn't exist, you know. And so I would say one of the biggest things is, sometimes when your life is online, when we're working in these online spaces, sometimes the best way to grow and the best way to become more equipped is to actually not do that equipping in the online space. And so, because what we end up finding is that then that becomes our sole identity. And so more and more, I think we need to get back to like a very kind of almost orthodox approach of like quiet time, just spending time in our Bibles and just like physically reading a book, like you know, making that part of our everyday practice, making that part of our everyday life. Because I think if we're constantly consuming and pursuing digital strategies and digital ways of working, very quickly that becomes our identity. But also very quickly that also starts to kind of reprogram us in a way. You know, we live in a, what do they call it, like an attention economy. So everyone's vying for your attention. Everyone wants, you know, there's ads running, there's everyone wants you on their platform. They want videos as short as possible. And so what ends up happening is, if we are constantly in that world, we start to see the Lord through that lens as well. And so we start to see, you know, well, our quiet times could need to only be 30-second quiet times, and we can only pray for a certain amount of time, and like and it really does start to reprogram us. So I would say there's so much resource, there's so much literature out there, where, you know, we're absolutely blessed with all the podcasts and the theology that's available to us now. But I think, in a way, I think sometimes we need to fight for what we believe and actually carve out that time. You know, I remember a sermon a couple of years ago talking about building margins into our life, you know, making sure we have those margins. And maybe that's as simple as, you know, spending 30 minutes reading the Bible every single day and really pursuing what it is that we claim to believe in. And again, I think, like I was saying, there's so much literature available. There's so much resource available online. But yeah, I think it's very hard to go out and do the online thing, discipleship, if we don't have a foundational knowledge ourselves. And that's, I think that's the journey I'm on at the moment as well. Personally, if I'm being honest,
So we need to dig our well first because we can give water to others, so to say.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with you. You talk a little bit about data when we're looking at ministry data, and the report's also focusing on that. Data in itself doesn't sound so sexy for spreading the gospel, but what role could ministry data play in increasing the impact of Christian missions?
This is such a good question. And in the report, it talks about this idea of data literacy and really knowing how to use and work with data. Now, when we're talking data, people are probably thinking, oh my goodness, I need to now go and, you know, learn how to study charts and look at all this kind of stuff. But really simply what it's saying is that if we look at what's available to us freely right now, it's very easy to get a picture of who in the world we should be focusing our attention around in terms of evangelism, and maybe who we should be focusing our attention around in terms of discipleship. And so having a very remedial base level understanding of like what it means to be able to understand like audiences and personas is I think would really actually be a benefit to a lot of people. And so what I mean there is like, you know, we're talking about everyone's gathering online, everyone's using WhatsApp, people are on Facebook and TikTok and Instagram. And so what you often find is that a church will say, we need to be online, but they won't necessarily know where, why, what platform. And so it's a bit of a shotgun approach. They choose every single social platform. They use the same content on all those platforms. And then at the end of the month, the poor social media manager or content team reports to the pastor, and the pastor goes, well, no one's watching this. No one's engaging with it. What's going on? And the problem is because before even implementing some form of strategy like that, they didn't actually just take the time to understand, like, fundamentally, why do we want to do this? And who do we want to reach with it? And so I think when we're talking about data and data literacy, we're not talking about big data. We're not talking about data mining. We're not talking about like selling your church congregation data. We're just talking about understanding who it is that you're wanting to reach and what exactly you're wanting to do with that individual once you reach them. And so a great example would be if you look at Germany and if you look at Europe in general, we would say, you know, kind of post-Christian secular world, specifically among the youth. So if you're saying we're wanting to reach more young people as a church with social media, what you would then do is you would look at publicly available data online and you'd say, like, what is the top social platform for teenagers in Germany?
Right.
There's tons of readily available data, and it says, okay, well, it's TikTok. And you go, oh, amazing. Like, okay, cool. So now we know if we're going to reach young people, TikTok is the way. And then you could go and look at, like, okay, well, in terms of TikTok, what is, like, the number one trend in terms of the type of content? And it would say, like, maybe it's dance videos. And you go, okay, well, if we're wanting to reach young people on TikTok, like, dance videos is probably the best thing to do. And so very easily you can start to build a picture of like who it is that you're wanting to reach, and then that can then dictate what you do. So you could say then say when we go and we produce content for this online platform, it needs to look and feel this way because these are the people we're trying to reach, and then these are the ways that these individuals would engage and respond. And so this is how we need to engage and respond. And so what it really does do is it means we're more of an arrow than a shotgun. We actually know who it is that we're wanting to engage and where we're wanting to engage, and then producing content that is relevant to that audience. You know, but again, I even understand that when people are hearing this and they're reading this, they're probably thinking, well, we don't have that skill, that expertise. You know, we don't necessarily have the budgets for it. But the truth is, you have young people in your church
who
use these platforms and these technologies every single day. They have the skill, they have the know-how, and often they're actually just looking for a way to serve. And so this might be the great way of you creating an environment in your church where you can encourage young people to actually serve and serve in a way that is relevant and is exciting to them. You know, do we still need to put out chairs? Yes. Do we still need people at the door of the church to welcome people? Completely. But we can also offer other ways of serving. And maybe this is a great example of that.
So I'm taking with me, church leaders don't have to build up the skills all by themselves, but they have the opportunity to give the younger generations opportunity to upskill them or to bring their skill into a kingdom mindset.
Yeah.
Very good. So one topic even that needs even more upskilling, I would say, is one topic, and that's the last in this deep dive for the report. The report also focuses in, I love it, look into these topics where we are not already have defined margins and borders around what will we be. So technologies like Web3, like crypto, like metaverse, what opportunities do you see for global missions in there?
Yeah, that is such a great question. These have all been really good questions, so thank you. I would say the first thing I would also caution, I think with any new technologies, you have what's called the innovation hype cycle. So, you know, everything goes through it where, you know, we're seeing with AI now, where everyone has AI for everything, or that every company has an innovation lab. But a lot of that, you know, kind of fades out and falls away. And so I would say that what these technologies do offer is a phenomenal opportunity to engage new people and new audiences in ways we previously couldn't have before. What I would caution against, though, is don't pursue a strategy using these technologies just because you've heard about it somewhere and it sounds like the thing to do. It sounds like the new cool thing. Like, rather make an informed decision, because at the end of the day, people are still going to gather in person. You still want to be doing that. And people are still going to be using traditional legacy social media platforms. You know, you could even put WhatsApp in as one of those as well. And so often what ends up happening is we pursue these strategies with these new technologies, not necessarily understanding how they work, and then end up spending a lot of resource on that, not really having anything to show for it. But what I do want to say is, again, coming back to what we said right at the beginning, this idea of what innovation and technologies like, Web3, whether we're talking metaverse or any of these kind of like VR, AR experiences, is that what it does do is it allows for genuine communities to form again in a sense that's non-traditional. You know, people are able to find individuals who maybe previously they would have never met if it wasn't for the specific technology or the specific specific virtual environment. And there's also an element that we're also not talking about, which is people, you know, individuals with disabilities or with health issues. What these technologies allow is for them to be active in society again. You know, some person maybe is not able to attend a church physically, but because of these technologies, they're able to. And so I would say it's important to be aware of what's happening. It's important to understand what these technologies are and how they can benefit us. But I would also caution against just rushing into it and adopting it specifically, because so much of it is still unknown. And I think also fundamentally as the church, like our core business is loving God and loving people. And technology just allows us to do that in a greater sense. And so, technology itself should never be the focus. It should always be people and God. And if this technology allows me to reach more people and introduce them to God, then, you know, then we'll pursue it.
Yeah.
But if not, if it's going to be a distraction, then, you know, we'll stay away from it for now.
Very, very nice. Thank you for these insights so far. Our listeners will notice that we have only the ability to touch the surface of these topics. So we both invite you very much to read the State of the Great Commission report. We heard a lot about the report. Nick, a little bit more about you. You personally, you live and work in an urban context, Cape Town, South Africa. As cultural, political, economical, spiritual context differs so much. For example, compared to a rural village in Germany where I live at the moment, or a mega city like Manila in the Philippines, how can we benefit in learning from each other globally? That is on the heart of Lausanne, and that is also what you're up to.
Wow. I think, coming back to something I mentioned right at the beginning is this idea of when you read a report like the State of the Great Commission report, it really does highlight what is happening in both the global sense, but also the regional sense. And Lausanne is very intentional around this idea of polycentric missions, this idea of like, you know, we used to have this idea of like west to the rest, you know, if it didn't come from Europe or America, you know, that's who would send missions organizations. But I think increasingly so, what we're seeing is more and more missions movements start up almost as wildfires in different places and places we never thought. And almost there isn't necessarily a formula that we can take. from these different things and apply it globally, what we're seeing is genuine moves of God in pockets and places where the Holy Spirit is moving. And so for myself, living in Cape Town, South Africa is generally more of a Christian conservative country, and so we lean that way a little bit more. But yeah, exactly like you're saying, you know, in a small little rural village in Germany, we're now seeing, and we're now able, through technology, we're hearing that these things are happening, and we're seeing the move of God in ways that we previously never would have done before. And again, highlighting how amazing these technologies can be, that we're able to be aware of what's happening in these environments. And I think more and more, I think the one thing that we've seen, and I think this is, you know, post-COVID, there's a lot of analysis around this as well, is this idea of people are moving back to like a real sense of orthodoxy. And what I mean by that is this idea of like, we just want the word and we want the Lord and we crave his presence. And I think what we're seeing now is more and more, whether you're in an urban center or a rural community, whether you're from a Muslim background or a Hindu background, that is more true now than ever before, is that people just desire truth and the sense of being part of something that's bigger than themselves. And this is why I also think the church is so beautifully placed, because we offer this idea of truth, the perfect truth, the truth in the Lord. But then we also offer this idea of like genuine community. And by being part of us, you're part of something so much bigger than yourself. And and I think that's one of the beauties of what we're seeing globally, the idea that technology is aiding to that. And I think technology is also the ultimate equalizer as well. And so no longer do you have these disparities between people who have access to information and those who don't. I mean, you guys are a perfect example. If you look at the Gutenberg printing press and you look at the dissemination of the early gospel in German. And how that worked, and now you're seeing that at a global scale, and you're seeing that more Bibles being translated into local languages than ever before, more cultural and contextual Christianity.
Really?
So I generally think it's an extremely exciting time, and I think what encourages me the most is not necessarily seeing what's happening in the big urban metros, but what is happening in the rural villages of like Europe, and just seeing this amazing move of God. Churches that have only had 10 people in them for the last 10, 20 years, all of a sudden experiencing revival. So yeah, it's extremely encouraging.
So your heart is very much up to connecting people with each other. That really comes out through what you are, what you're taking us into. In questions of your job, you are partnerships manager for the global NPO Christian Vision. So what are you doing there, and what is your heart's calling in this?
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, I have the honor of, I've been with Christian Vision now for 11 years. Always based out of Cape Town. So Christian Vision, or CV as it's more commonly referred to, is an evangelism ministry that's been around since 1989. We're actually based out of the UK, so founded as a charity in the UK. You know, we now have about 360 staff working in about 34 countries, and kind of our focus has always been, how do we reach people with the gospel and use technology as a way to do that? So in the early years, it was shortwave radio and then commercial FM radio, and you know, for the last 10 to 12 years, leveraging technology mostly through social media for mission. And so when I joined the team years ago, it was in what we would have called our community department, led that, and now find myself in overseeing partnerships primarily for our work across sub-Saharan Africa, but then I also have the added responsibility of leading our partnerships team globally. And so in the truest sense, you mentioned that idea of like connecting people. And so, you know, we're saying we're an evangelism ministry, and we produce content and we put it online with the intention of introducing people to Jesus. But ultimately, the work of the Great Commission is never done in isolation. It's always done in partnership. And so, you know, how do we work with the local church to help connect people to the local church? How do we help individuals with discipleship? You know, whether it's even translation, cultural contextualization, all of that. So very much looking at how we can you know, partner in a mutually beneficial way that ultimately benefits the kingdom. And so, yeah, my role is keeps me busy, but also leads me to have amazing conversations like this. And, you know, I get to be part of stuff like the Lausanne movement, which is also equally as amazing. So, yeah.
Okay. We are walking toward a finish in our talk. So we have been talking about a lot about questions. Global scale questions, what question, asking questions to the global church, collecting it and building it together, putting the right question for the missional gaps today. We've been talking about the questions we need to ask the people we are encountering online. So now, maximum focus, just the nick here in the talk. Do you remember when you first encountered Christ? Which questions were important to you at that time?
Oh, really? That's phenomenal. Yeah, I think it was questions around identity. I grew up, parents were still married, had a younger sister, but found myself riddled with anxiety. Very different to how I am now. Extremely introverted. Had a mental breakdown when I was 16. Psychologist, psychiatrist. And was invited to church, loved music, actually wanted to be a full-time musician, was invited to church because the band was free. The Wind.
Okay.
And couldn't believe that, you know, every Sunday they have this band playing and it's free. You don't have to pay. You can just go and watch them. And it was in that first, it was that first Sunday where just the sense of, I don't need to be anything or anyone else. I can just be myself. Who God has called me to be. And I think for myself, for me, who's someone who had struggled with this identity, with this anxiety, it was really what kind of rooted me and grounded me. And it's, I can honestly say it was one of those first Sunday I went, put my hand up and haven't looked back ever since. And to the point where, I mean, sadly, my mom's passed away. Well, both my parents have passed away. But even post that experience, my mom would up and say to me, like, what happened? I don't recognize you. You're full of joy. You talk more. You're outgoing. You're, you know, and so truly for me, it was this idea of like, who am I? Like, and knowing that ultimately who I am in Christ is enough, is what fundamentally changed my life. Yeah.
Thank you. That is really touching. And, I would love to share some more about that and to also engage with how my first questions were. But the both of us, we will meet in Seoul at the 4th Lausanne Congress. It will be taking place in Seoul this September. We'll both be participants in place there, and it has the focus of building collaborative action teams. So. Big scale again, how could or will these collaborative action teams, also on topics of digital missions as well as so many others, shape the future of missions globally and locally? What can you see?
Yeah, I think the whole idea with Lausanne is that unlike like traditional kind of conference environments where you would just come together and you would listen to sermons. I think what they're really trying to do is identify areas or, you know, as previously mentioned, as gaps where people have mutual interest, and then identifying how can we work together in a way that truly sees a transformation and change in the Great Commission. And so what we're going to be doing throughout the course of the week in Korea is every single day there's going to be workshops in the afternoon. People will choose exactly what specific focus they're going to want to choose. So mine is digital evangelism. And so people who are interested in that will gather every single day. And the idea is we're going to go through a process of identifying what is our current reality, what is the future state that we're going to be looking forward to, and then how we can work together to achieve that. And I think one of the actual positives and the beauty around that is I think for the longest time, we've, as Christians, as individuals, as ministries, as churches, we've tried to go it alone. you know, we've all been kind of at our own ideas and our own identities. But I think we're starting to see now people are saying, hey, listen, we're going to put that all aside and say, ultimately, we just want the Lord to come and move in our communities. If that means we collaborate in this way to do that, that's what we're going to do. So I think the kind of theme of Christianity to me globally at the moment is pursuing partnership and collaboration and looking at how we can work together, like, and in the truest sense of the word, work together to see. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that goes. I think there'll be great discussions. There'll be vibrant. But ultimately, I really hope that we do come away with areas where people do see very practical ways of being able to collaborate and partner, specifically as we kind of look towards 2033, which is a big focus for a lot of organizations and churches as well. So,
So we're looking forward to a great time together. And we as Alliance Mission are also very keen on sharing the learnings and impact we encounter there. So one of the next issues of our missions magazine MOVE will focusing on the learnings and the impacts we find at Lausanne Forum. We'll keep you informed. So for today, I'm saying a big thank you to you, Nick. Has been a big pleasure talking to you. And in our podcast, it's always that the guest has the ability to finish the podcast in asking this last question. And it's the most, it's the hardest question, because which it is about saying just one sentence. So which one sentence would you like to pass to our readers and listeners?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of somebody, a pastor out of Melbourne, Australia, called Mark Sayers, and he talks about in the world we live in, kind of secular post-Christian, people want the kingdom without the king. So they want the ethics and the morality, but without Jesus. And I think for us as Christians, what we need to start doing is putting the king back in the kingdom and understanding that without him, none of that holds weight, and that ultimately it's because of Jesus and because of what he did for us on the cross that we have all of this. And so putting the king back into the kingdom, I think, is one of the most important things for us to be doing as believers.
Danke für dein Interesse. Digital und Real ist der Podcast der Region Digital von der Allianz Mission. Alle Informationen unter allianzmission.de/regiondigital.